You've been searching for answers, wandering in the dark, looking for that glimmer of light that resonates with your soul and spirit. As you step into this new era that some indigenous people refer to as the Rainbow Bridge, without a compass, without a guide, yet needing some help to navigate your way through this spiritual maze, look no further. We've got the map. Searcher's Roadmap. Now here's your host for the Searcher's Roadmap, Rhonda Harris.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Rhonda Harrison bringing you the Searcher's Roadmap with Rachel Celaya, and we're going to be talking about the seven steps of happiness and what white tantra is. And with that, I'll bring Rachel in. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there, Rhonda.
How are you doing?
I am well, thanks.
Good. So, tell us about how you got into Kundalini yoga and then and the meditation and that type of stuff. And then if we could then go into talking about the seven steps to happiness.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So let's see. I'll give you the medium length version, I think. I had done yoga a lot ever since I was 12 years old. And it was really a big part of my life. But it wasn't Kundalini. I'd never really heard of Kundalini until I started practicing it. And then when I got into my early 30s, I kept injuring myself in yoga classes or just after yoga classes. And I knew that was my own ego was pushing me beyond what my physical body was capable of. And so I would, hurt myself so badly I couldn't walk for several weeks and on my back in pain and chiropractic visits and living on ibuprofen, and it was just really horrible. So I gave up yoga. I just thought, I can't do it anymore. It's too dangerous or whatever. And so I stopped doing yoga for several years, and when I was in my mid-30s, I was kind of nearing some kind of nervous breakdown. I was in a really stressful job, and my marriage was unhealthy, and I felt like I was stuck. And I would literally drive by hospitals and wish that something would happen to me so I could go in there and just stop what I was doing and get a break, get a rest. And I knew those were unhealthy thoughts and not something that I know I really wanted to have happen. But, something in me was just like, this life is not working. And so one day I took the day off from work, which was a really big deal for me. I was a school teacher, and I just had such a sense of burden and pressure and responsibility. And so I didn't go into work, and I went for a walk, and I went to a friend's house, and she said, "Hey, I'm going to a Kundalini yoga class this afternoon. Do you want to come?" And something in me was just like, okay, I'll try it. I'd never been to it. I didn't know anything about it. But I was open to trying something different. So I went with her, and that was my first ever class. And I tell people, and it's true, it changed my life. Like the very first class, I felt like I had come home, that I shifted something in my consciousness and in my aura and in my awareness, where I felt connected to something bigger than just my ego or my suffering. And I started going once a week, and pretty soon a lot of things changed in my life. I was able to work part-time, and I ended up separating from my husband and just really starting this path of self-care and self-awareness. And about a year later, signed up for a Kundalini yoga teacher training course, and I've been teaching ever since.
And do you have any upcoming events that people could come to in the next few months or weeks?
Well, let me just mention that I have several free classes on YouTube that you can link to from my website, which is www.adishaktisenter.com. So those are good for, you know, people who are anywhere on the planet and any time zone. And then, yeah, we have lots of regular events coming up at my studio. There's one this Sunday, August 30th. There's a training in Super Health, which is Kundalini Yoga for Eating Habits and Addictions, and that's coming up September 11th through 13th. And lots of other things on the calendar that I like to collaborate with local healers and other teachers. And so we've got a couple of things coming up, something for the fall equinox that will include Kundalini yoga and sound healing. And we like to celebrate the moon cycles. So we'll often do something on the full moon or new moon. So yeah, lots going on.
Yeah. And those are really nice. I've been to a few of those and they are so life-changing in themselves, just from the information you get and how you're moving forward and seeing how it actually feels for you with doing the yoga, plus also realizing that it all is interconnected.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, it might not be for everybody, but for me, I need to move my body, and I can't just sit and get information. I mean, I can do that. You know, I have a master's degree. I know how to sit and receive information, but to me, spiritual information is much better experience than just, you know, going in the ears. And so for me, that's how I teach. That's how I learn. And you learn, you experience, you know, live it in your body. You breathe it. You visualize it. You're working with the chakras. It's just, it's a whole person experience, not just for the intellect.
That's very true, and it's nice to be bringing the whole body, mind, spirit into it so that it's a more rounded and effective way of doing life changes.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I think.
Yeah. And how would you approach this, what is it with the 7 steps of happiness that you're sharing? I mean, is it also doing different mudras and different kiras, or is it, how do we do that?
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll jump into the 7 steps to happiness. So, Yogi Bhajan liked to, and he's the main teacher of this branch of Kundalini Yoga that I study and teach. He liked to give lists and really kind of codify things and make things really clear. So he gave us these 7 steps to happiness, and he, as far as I know, didn't teach specific kriyas or mudras for each of the steps, but that's the brilliant thing about being a teacher is you get to be creative and intuitive, excuse me, and bring in, you know, what I think is going to be most effective in teaching this. So I teach this series once a week on, and we do one of the steps to happiness each week, and several of them are also have been recorded as free podcasts, which are also on that same website. So I've created classes around each of these steps with yoga and meditation that go along with each one, and then I've also been practicing the steps myself, so I bring my own personal experience with each step to my classes. So, basically the 7 steps are setting an intention and then committing to that, so commitment, and then commitment brings character. Character leads to dignity. Dignity leads to divinity. Divinity leads to grace. Grace leads to the power to sacrifice, and then that leads to happiness. So those are kind of the steps that he just laid out, and then it's up to each one of us to kind of feel into, well, what does that word mean and how does it relate to my life and into my particular intention. So if you like, I'll kind of go through each one of those steps with a specific intention. Okay. So for me right now in my life, I'm actually engaged to be married. And so when I was originally working with these steps, that's what came up to me, is to work, to apply these steps to my relationship. So my intention, which I wrote out and created some art around, had to do with really creating a beautiful, uplifted, happy, healthy, holy relationship with my partner. And that I've never done that in my life. I was married, I was divorced. I've never, you know, had a relationship that lasted the rest of my life. This is a new thing. So I really set that intention of, this is what I want to create. So that was kind of, you know, like my North Star, like where am I going with this path to happiness? And then the next step is commitment. And in a way that, you know, seems pretty clear what that means as far as relationship. So when I was working with it, for me, commitment meant giving up is not an option. Like, there's no back door. I don't have an out. I'm fully in. And no matter what comes up, I'm sticking with it. And that's a really tricky thing for all of us, I think. You know, we're used to having lots of options. And, well, if it doesn't work out, you know, then we'll figure out something different. And actually, that's how I went into my first marriage, was, I mean, I'll stick here for as long as it's working out. I literally, that was my intention about that marriage. And at a certain point, it stopped working out and I was done. And that was the best thing for me, too. I'm not saying that, you know, that was wrong. It's just for this marriage and for my intention for the rest of my life, I want to figure out how to do this thing happily, you know, not staying in just because I said I would, but really creating a beautiful relationship. So that was my intention. And then moving through commitment, Yogi Bhajan said, the reason the word is commitment is because in every life we are meant to commit. He liked to play with words. So commitment means meant to commit. And that's really the foundation to achieving happiness. Is. And I like to connect each of these also, or several of them, to the chakras. So to me, commitment has to do with the root chakra and our ability to ground and send our roots down into something and, you know, not be toppled one way or another before, you know. So that's commitment. I don't know if you have any questions or I could keep going on with
it. You can just keep going. That's fine.
Okay. So next step is character. So when you're committed to something, there's going to be tests. There's going to be challenges. There'll be temptations. When I was working on this particular step for myself, I actually had a dream that I had an opportunity to have an affair. And in the dream, I thought to myself, how would I feel if my partner did that? And, you know, immediately I felt the pain of that. And so it was just like, okay, well, that's my answer. I'm not going to do that. So I think character has a lot to do with integrity, with sticking to your word, with, you know, having standards. Like, you know, if this is going to hurt somebody, should I do it? No. It's building the muscle of character of doing what you said you were going to do. And this seems related also to the second and also the third chakras, but particularly the second chakra, you know, the sexual chakra has a lot to do with temptation, with addiction, with compulsion, with kind of acting unconsciously when the second chakra is not balanced. And so, you know, what happens when that comes up, when, you know, there's an opportunity to not stick with your commitment? What do you do? If you do stick with your commitment, you're building character. And I think, you know, that's something that also we're all challenged with. Yogi Bhajan said, you're mean if you don't mean what you say. So again, you know, keeping with what you said you were going to do, and even through whatever tests or issues come up. For me too, around this issue, it's an internal thing, so it's not just external temptations, but my own ups and downs. You know, as a woman, I'm cyclical, and you know, some days are really hard just on a hormonal level. And how do I respond to my partner through those? How do I practice self-care and not blaming him or dragging him into my issues or my negativity, and really, you know, doing my own work as opposed to blaming or projecting or relying on the relationship to keep me happy. So moving on, we started with intention, and we really committed to it, and then we're going to be tested, and that's going to build character. And when we stay with it, and when our character gets really strong, that just automatically results in the next step, which is dignity. And when I looked up the word dignity, the definition is the state or quality of being worthy of honor or respect. Of being worthy of honor or respect, and that, of course, has to do with self-respect and our sense of self-worth, respecting others, and respecting ourselves. So let's see, when I was working on dignity, for me that came up. Again, my life gave me a little opportunity to practice this. For some reason, that at that time when I was working on it, we had lots of opportunities to go to summer parties. There were, like, partner and I would go to summer parties, and there were other men there and other women there, and we had an opportunity to kind of practice interacting with people of the opposite sex in a way that created self-respect and respect for others. So, for instance, not flirting or not looking at other people as a way to, as something to attain, or even something to attain more of our own self-worth, like, oh, if I can flirt and be attractive, then I'm going to feel better about myself, like just not even going down that road, and being just very, like, friendly and kind, but also honorable and worthy of respect. So, and to me, this relates to the third chakra and our navel center, and the navel center has a lot to do with identity and really being who we are, and self-worth and self-respect. So that's dignity. And then we move into divinity. And to me, divinity is in the heart center. And when I looked up the word divine or divinity, it's connected to the Latin word Deus, which means God or godly. It's also connected to Deva in Sanskrit, and it's connected to connotations of goodness, beauty, and justice. So, like our own inner godliness or divinity, when we have kind of these lower areas strong, and then we can move up into the heart center, it just takes us out of what Yogi Bhajan might call our kind of animal or beastly nature into our more human selves, connected more to the divine and the angelic realm. So, you know, just spending time in prayer and meditation, in service, the heart center and the divine have a lot to do with compassion and service and supporting others. And so, you know, looking beyond your own self and your own ego or needs or wants, to, you know, reaching out and being available to your community and the world around you. And of course, your partner. It's, in my case, with working on this, how can I bring the divine and the sacred into my relationship? You know, I've taken care of some of the more animal stuff, like, you know, I'm not going to be flirting, I'm not going to be cheating, like, I'm here. And then it gives you this ability to really bring the divine in, I feel like, when there's that level of trust and honesty and commitment. So that's the fourth chakra of the heart, bringing in the divine. Yogi Bhajan said, if you can't see God in all, you can't see God at all. So really seeing, you know, the divine and the sacred and the holy in your partner and in everybody around you, and focusing on that as opposed to other options. And so this leads us up to grace. And grace is kind of a, you know, it's maybe an old, a lot of these words are kind of old-fashioned, and it's up to us to kind of make it relevant and contemporary and how it's going to relate to ourselves. But let's see, I've got this definition. When you are consistent in your worship and your discipline and your devotion, with that foundation in your life, a great Shakti, a great force or power will come from God, from the universe, from spirit. And this is grace. It is uplifting. It comes unexpectedly. When grace comes, your mind may change and your heart may melt. Your sight will become clear and penetrating. So this idea that we're in, you know, God's grace, that we're receiving blessings, that we're in the flow of the divine, and unexpected and beautiful support comes from the unseen world and from, you know, the material world. And so I'm still, this is kind of where I feel like I'm at in my relationship, because we're getting ready to get married. Well, we're not getting married till June, so we've got several months ahead to really prepare and plan and work towards what we want our ceremony to be and what we want our marriage to be. And so I'm open to grace, and I'm open to, you know, beautiful miracles happening around supporting our relationship. And one of the things that's happening is we'll both be taking a Kundalini Yoga teacher training level 2 called Authentic Relationships next week in Crestone. So that was a piece of grace that just fell into our laps. Hey, there's this training that we can do in a beautiful, sacred place together. So we'll be off to do that next week.
Yeah, and Crestone is so beautiful.
Exactly, yeah, it's such a powerful place. The other thing about grace, and I think this connects to our, for moving up the chakras, the throat chakra is, you know, we think of a graceful person or someone that's dressed gracefully or speaks gracefully or just has a graceful presence. And that's connected to the throat chakra and just how we express our essence, whether it's through words or actions or, you know, our appearance or however we're expressing our true self, that comes through in a graceful way. You know, and as far as relationships, that we don't speak to each other in a harsh way, that we're, you know, just conscious of how we express ourselves to each other, and how we say things is just as important as what we say. And that can be hard in a day-to-day, you know, household environment. But it's a practice that I think it's really a good one to work on. So then we get up to really the final step that leads to happiness, and this is called the power to sacrifice. And, you know, there's an obvious level when you're committed to one person, you sacrifice your opportunities or whatever with other people. You are not thinking just about yourself anymore. You're thinking about the other person and about the relationship as a whole. You know, there's compromise. You can't always get what you want. There's this quality of having to let go of things, and that can be a sacrifice. And yet having the power or strength to do that really, I think, you know, helps the whole ego thing. You know, ego is usually what gets in the way to happiness in life in general, and particularly in relationships. So when there's an opportunity for the ego to take a back seat, that's when happiness occurs, in my personal experience. When we can let go of being right or let go of getting our way, then there's just more of a sense of ease and neutrality and being okay with however things are. And another aspect, when you look up the word sacrifice, it comes from the Latin, to make holy is really what it means. So when we offer something that we value, like our life, not in the sense of life or death, but in like my life is in service of something, we make our life holy. You know, the act itself is holy, and we ourselves become holy when we can sacrifice something that we really value. And there's a Yogi Bhajan said, all things come from God and all things go back to God. So nothing is ours anyway, and we can make it holy, make it sacred by just offering it up, giving it up, not holding onto it or trying to have it be, you know, our way. And I have a story about this power to sacrifice. So when I was in Kundalini Yoga teacher training, I began the training not necessarily to become a teacher, but just because I really wanted to learn more about this technology that had really saved my life. But the very first weekend of the training, and every weekend throughout that we had the training, I had visions of going to West Africa and teaching Kundalini Yoga. And I had no idea how it was supposed to happen or, you know, would people be open to it? And there's a language barrier and, you know, how would I support myself? And, you know, there seemed like there are a bajillion reasons why that wasn't going to actually happen. But it felt really like a strong message. And so I listened to my intuition and I began looking around, like, well, how would that work? Are there organizations I could volunteer at, or, you know, what would happen? And so I applied to different things. I applied to the Peace Corps, which I'd already been in, but as like an administrative position. And I looked up, there are a couple nonprofits that are teaching yoga in India or in Africa. And then one day a friend that I had just recently met said, oh, hey, you've heard of Strong Heart, right? And I was like, Strong Heart? No, I have no idea what you're talking about. And we went online and she showed me this nonprofit that was operating in West Africa in Liberia, working with young people who had been victims of the Civil War and had been refugees from the 10-year Civil War in Liberia. So I contacted them, sent an email, and didn't hear anything back. So I just, you know, I was like, well, I don't know, universe, you have to show me the way here. And about that time, it was the end of the school year, and I was still a Latin teacher, and I it was time to decide whether I would come back the following year. And I went in for my end of year interview with my principal, and he said, you know, Rachel, you don't seem that happy here. And I wasn't. And he said, why don't you take a week and think about if really coming back here is the next, you know, what you want to do. We want to have you back, but, you know, we want you to be happy here. So I took that week and I really did some soul searching and, you know, I saw it was true. I wasn't happy there. It didn't really feel like what I was supposed to be doing with my life. And I didn't really feel like I was being of that much service to people. You know, I was really serving the students intellectually, teaching them word roots and, you know, kind of the roots of Western culture. And it was really interesting, but it didn't have that kind of, you know, appeal of teaching yoga, Kundalini yoga that, you know, reached people on so many different levels. So I took the plunge and I said, yeah, I won't be coming back next year. And I trusted that, you know, I was going to be taken care of in some way. And so 10 days after the end of school, I was doing my daily yoga meditation practice, and I just had a really heartfelt prayer come through me that, may I be of service, just show me what you want me to do, and I trust I'm going to be taken care of. And that afternoon, I got a phone call from that Strong Heart nonprofit in Liberia, West Africa, and they said, we're so sorry we haven't gotten in touch with you for the last several months, but we still want you. Can you come to teach Kundalini Yoga? And I said, yes. So, and that involved quite a bit of sacrifice because I had just met my current fiance. That was 2011. And so it would mean, you know, leaving the country and leaving my home and my cat and my safety zone, and it meant bringing my son with me. I had a son in fifth grade, and so taking him out of school, and, you know, it was a big deal. It definitely was not an easy choice, other than I knew that Spirit had set up the whole thing, so I just trusted that that's what needed to happen, and was willing to make the sacrifices, and it all did work out the way it needed to work out, and I had a really beautiful experience there, and it gave me the opportunity to teach right away. You know, I hadn't been sure I was going to teach, but I started teaching every day, and, you know, that's really the best thing for becoming a teacher, is just doing it. So
that's so true.
And then, you know, and it gets right back to that was my original intention. You know, those weeks of teacher training and seeing in my third eye that I was teaching Kundalini Yoga in West Africa, and, you know, it all manifested. And so I got to be a teacher, and that really has brought so much happiness to me. So that's the seven.
How long were you in West Africa?
I just ended up being there for 3 months. I was thinking it might be a full school year. The program is going through some changes, and I think that my soul wanted me to come back to Boulder and open up the Adi Shakti Center, which is what I did a couple months after I got back from Africa. So we were on to the next project.
Yeah. And Spirit always sets those up so nicely.
Yeah, and I had no idea, you know, that's what I was going to come back and do, but that's what happened. And I still stay in touch with the young people that I worked with there. In fact, one of them got a scholarship to go to a prep school in Utah, and so he just graduated there and is starting college in Utah, and he's a soccer star, and he's just making so much of his life, and it was such a blessing to help impact him. And in fact, he read his first book because my son and I were there. My son had brought a bunch of Hardy Boys books.
Uh-huh.
And we gave one to this young man, and he just loved it. And it was the first book he ever read. And, you know, now he's in college. And so even if it was just him that we touched, I feel like we were there for a purpose. And he's on his way now to hopefully a life of success and giving back and going back to Liberia and sharing the resources that he was given while he was here in the States.
Let's take a short break so we can get a cup of tea or a glass of water. Callers, if you'd like to call in to 1-347-838-9142 with your questions or comments. And after we come back from the break, Rachel will talk to us about White Tantra. And with that, we'll take a short break, and we'll be back in just a minute or so. Welcome back, listeners. We're with Rachel Zelaya, and we are speaking of Kundalini Yoga and the seven steps to happiness and how that interacts with our chakras. Also, if you'd like to download this show today, it'll be ready about 5 minutes after the hour, after the show's over. And then you can download it, share it with your friends, re-listen to it, you know, rewrite down Rachel's information. And also, if you'd like for another type of speaker to come onto this show, please reach me at Searchers Roadmap, SearchersRoadmap. Searchers Roadmap. And with that, Rachel, thank you so much for sharing about the seven steps to happiness that make so much more sense and how you can apply it to, you know, intimate relationships as well as relationships with the world and yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, really, it'll apply to any intention that you set. I mean, it could have to do with health, or it could have to do with career, or it could have to do with self-care, or, I mean, it's just infinite. Having that intention and listening to, you know, your intuition, your spirit is definitely the first step. And one thing we could do, if you wanted, before we move into the white tantric piece, is just do a short meditation that might help people to connect with that intention and
sure.
That vision for happiness.
That would be beautiful, Rachel.
Okay. So we're going to come into a particular hand posture. So you can just be sitting straight on the floor in a chair. And you're going to bring your hands in prayer pose, palms flat together with the fingertips pointing up towards the sky. And the knuckle and the thumbnail are going to come up and touch the forehead. So it's like prayer pose, but right up in front of your face with the thumbs touching the forehead. And you can close your eyes and even allow the focus of your eyes to be at the third eye point, just above and in between the eyebrows with the eyes closed. And just take some nice deep breaths here. Breathing is calm and long and deep. And you're just bringing your attention up to the brow point, to our center of intuition, our inner knowing. Letting all of your awareness come up to this point. And just allow your awareness, your creative imagination, your soul to speak to you in whatever ways that it wants to. Maybe it'll be images, maybe it'll be words, sounds, just a feeling, even a smell. Asking soul or spirit to show you in what direction does it want you to be walking to reach happiness. It's our birthright to be happy. And seeing yourself living in happiness, acting in happiness. What does that look like for you? A few more deep breaths. Feeling into what happiness is for you, what happiness looks like for you. When you feel complete, take a few more nice, long, deep breaths. And then you can bring your hands down to your heart center. Your left hand can go onto your heart and your right hand goes onto the top of your left. And just press your palms gently in towards your heart center. In prayer, full gratitude and trust that the guidance and support and resources that you need to walk on this path of happiness come to you, that you be taken care of and supported along the way. And even stopping to acknowledge how you've already been supported and guided this far. Trusting that even more is on the way. And when you feel complete, taking a few more long, deep breaths, feeling your heart center, feeling your connection with the divine, with spirit, with compassion, with your service to the world, however that looks. And then release the hands. And you can do these two simple meditations together every day, several times a day, once a week, however often you feel called to work with your intuition and your heart. Satnam. So then as you're ready, just open the eyes. And I find it really helpful to keep a journal and write down the things that come to me in meditation. That was a big part of opening my Kundalini Yoga studio, as I would meditate at least half an hour a day, specific Kundalini Yoga meditation, and all of this information just came streaming in about everything from what the studio was supposed to be called to where it was going to be to what to charge for classes. It's just a lot of information came in, and I had to sit there with a notebook during my meditations and download. Is there anything else you want to cover during our time, Rhonda?
Well, do we just want to touch on the white tantra part and also give out your information on how people can contact you again?
Okay, sure. So I really don't feel like I have, I'm certainly not an expert on this practice that Yogi Bhajan brought to us called white tantric yoga. It is very different from black tantric or red tantric. In our teachings, black tantric directs energy towards manipulating other human beings, and red tantric is really directing the energy for sexual purposes. And white tantric is quite different from either of those. It's done all over the world several times a year, but it's always done under the guidance of the Mahan Tantric, the great Tantric, and that is Yogi Bhajan. And he's no longer alive, so it's done, he was videotaped teaching these sessions, and so they're always done with these videotapes and then there is a kind of a person, a live human being who's the facilitator, who also holds the space and the energy. So you wear white and your head is covered, and it's lines of people. And so you do have a partner, but it could be male, female, it could be male, male, it could be female, female. It doesn't really matter the gender. But they're long lines of two people sitting right next to each other in a long row. And so that's part of the main quality of the setup, are these long rows of people facing each other. And it's said that the energy is moving down the rows in a Z pattern. So it'll go from, you know, one person on one side to the other person on the other side, but down a partner and then back and forth. So it's like a diagonal V down the rows. So the rows have to be very straight and organized. And if somebody has to get up to go to the bathroom or leave for whatever reason, then somebody else has to sit in that person's place to continue this zigzag energy. And I'll just it's held all day, and on the solstices, winter and summer solstice, it's held for 3 days in a row. Other times it's just one day. And it's composed of several different meditations or kriyas, and they're not always sitting, but they are always involving, you're working with your partner in some way. Sometimes you might be back to back, sometimes you're staring into your partner's eyes, sometimes you're touching your partner's hands in some ways or their arms. And the meditations can be anywhere from 11 minutes to 62 minutes. They often involve mantras and chanting. And they're definitely challenging. They can be, when you are sitting in one position for 62 minutes staring into somebody's eyes, it brings up a lot. And it can be quite transformational. And I'm going to just read this quote by Yogi Bhajan about white tantric. He says, "Since ancient times, humans have found that they have zillions of thoughts, billions of feelings, millions of emotions, thousands of desires, hundreds of fantasies, and multi-realities and personalities. Ultimately, our mind and thoughts rule us and bog us down. We try every method available to get rid of this pressure because it is eating us up inside. Yoga enables you to break through those subconscious blocks so you can enjoy life. In the shortest time, you can experience release from a lot of the burden and extra weight that you carry in your head. As you see and act on each moment with clarity, you will gain a deeper understanding of yourself, and your life will change. Your mind, body, and soul will act together as one. This is the path to personal freedom and awareness, and will bring more success to every area of your life." And so many people make it a commitment to practice white tantric at least once a year. And they really feel like it helps them to kind of reset and clear, as Yogi Bhajan said, the subconscious blocks. But it definitely works on a very subtle level. You know, you don't really know what's happened until afterwards. And then you're like, wow, I feel really different. But during it, generally, it can be very, you know, challenging and also very blissful. And, you know, everybody has a very unique experience with it. My partner and I, my current fiance and I, did it together within a couple months of starting of dating each other, and it was a very powerful kind of bonding experience to, you know, be sitting and staring in somebody's eyes for 3 days. But people do it, and you know, there's no any kind of romantic attraction or anything like that. And like I said, you can do it with same gender or different gender. So. Any other questions about it? I think those are kind of
the basics. I think that really explains it. And to let the listeners know, Vladimir, a Siberian shamaness, is going to be coming to the Red Feather area in October 30th, 31st, and 1st of November. And if you would like to get a hold of me on Facebook, Rhonda Harrison, or you can reach me at searchersroadmap@gmail.com. We're going to be planning some events then that are going to be explaining Tantra more and doing mm-hmm. some tantric rituals. And you've had Vada Mira in your studio and in your
she's amazing.
Yes. And she's coming in from Siberia, her and a couple of others that work with her. And if there's anyone out there that is open to sharing your home with them, or if you want your home blessed while she's there, or would like treatment or have a reading from her, you can reach me again at Rhonda Harrison on Facebook or searchersroadmap@gmail.com. And we're really getting excited. I'm still trying to pan it all out. There's a place in Red Feathers that you could stay called Beaver Meadows Resort Ranch, Rustic Resort Ranch, and their rooms are pretty, and condos are pretty affordable, especially if you're going to share them with just yourself. And there's fishing, and by that time it may be snow and ice, so we could possibly have tubing and horseback riding. And I'm really excited about being able to help her bring that to Red Feather area, do a 3-day retreat. There'll be more information coming out on that on the ceremony page and Latimer Siberian School of Mysteries and Mystics, I think is what it is. But you can reach me on my Facebook page, and I can get you in touch with all the information that we're going to do with that. And there will be some other travels throughout the world. And with that, I think we're going to call it a day, listeners. Thank you so very much for tuning in. We're really enjoying doing the shows, I and the guests that I've had. And I look forward to speaking with you again next week. I have two different types of healers and readers that will be on the 3rd and 4th. You can look it up on www.blogtalkradio.com/Winford. And it'll show you the upcoming shows. A couple of weeks, I have them scheduled out through December for Searchers Roadmap. We're going to be doing a series with a yogi from Africa. And we're going to do the importance of healing in a 6-series part, getting more comfortable with ourselves. And that'll be every 2 weeks starting September 25th. And with that, Rachel, thank you so very much for sharing with us. And I'll look forward to seeing you again soon down in the Boulder area. And listeners, please get a hold of Rachel if you have any questions or would like more information about the classes that she does have. She has a lot of classes at Adi Shakti Yoga Center. And share for one more time, Rachel, how people can get a hold of you.
Okay, sure. So the website is www.adishaktisenter.com, and that's spelled A-D-I-S-H-A-K-T-I. C-E-N-T-E-R, AdiShaktiCenter.com, or people can email me at Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, .Zelaya, Z as in zebra, E-L-A-Y-A, @gmail.com.
Thank
and it
you
was
so
lovely
very
to
much.
Chat with you, Rhonda. Thanks for having me on, and we'll talk again soon.
Always a pleasure.
Thank
you. And I look forward to seeing you soon.
Absolutely. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh.